tonight for that. I'm an alcoholic. Thank Bill and the Valley Group for inviting me up here or down here to speak. It's always an honor to say something about what this program has done for me in my life and my family. And I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous, and whenever I'm asked to do anything, I always say yes. And I was taught that a long time ago. I'd like to welcome the newcomers. It's amazing to see somebody pick up a 24-hour chip and a 30-day chip and a 60-day chip. Because it brings me back to where I was at, you know, a few years ago. My sobriety date is November 6th, 1997. And I always want to remember that date with some significance because it was a day in my life changed forever. And it's still changing. I guess a little bit about the way it was for me. I don't know when my first drink was. I know that I used to sneak drinks from my parents as a young kid, and I must have liked it because I kept doing it. But I remember, I was real young when I first started drinking, and it didn't get out of hand for me. You know, I enjoyed drinking thoroughly for a lot of years. Matter of fact, it was the one thing that I could always count on making me feel okay. I grew up in a semi-dysfunctional family, I guess. My mom divorced my dad for cheating on her when I was probably 6 years old. We moved from Kalinga to Merced. She fell in love with some Air Force men from Castle Air Force Base. We ended up moving to Tacoma, Washington. She fell in love with somebody else, married him. Ended up moving to Concord, California. She caught him, you know, wearing her clothes too many times, so she ended up leaving him for an alcoholic and married him. And eventually, you know, I kind of was drugged from town to town, you know, never really fitting in, never really, you know, having any consistency, you know, in my life. And one thing I could always count on as a kid was change, and you know, it was just a matter of when the other shoe was going to drop and we were going to be off the next town. But what happened was we ended up moving from Concord to Fresno, and I was probably, you know, 10, 11 years old, and she ended up hooking up with this guy living behind a bar in Fresno. Some of the old guys here might remember a bar near the Fresno Fairgrounds called the Turf Club, and there was a little apartment deal behind there, and most of the patrons of that bar would live there because they wouldn't have far to go to drink, and one of them was my poor stepfather, she was working there as a cocktail waitress. She ended up, you know, staying there. And we spent a lot of the times when I would come and visit my mom, because my mom and my original dad were divorced, we spent a lot of time going in that bar, you know. And they'd sit us up on the bar, and we'd, you know, be able to drink a little bit of beer. You know, as a young kid, it was just, you know, something that we did. It was kind of normal to do that stuff. But I never, you know, had a problem with it, you know, at that age, because I was a kid. And eventually, you know, I went to school and I did what kids do, was kind of that. I grew up in the 70s, and it was the you know, I kind of missed the hippie era, the you know, the 60s and the age of Aquarius and all that crap, and the 70s were on, and drugs were real popular around the time I was growing up, and there was a lot of kids getting off into that, and a lot of kids in my neighborhood sniffing glue and you know, getting high a lot, and I didn't participate in that. Matter of fact, I was kind of like an anti drug kid, you know. I saw what it had done to my my stepdad was a chronic pill taker, and I didn't want to be anything like him. And I saw some of my friends turning into drug addicts. I didn't want to be like them. And so what I did was I'd go down to 7-Eleven, I'd steal a bottle of Tyrolean, and I'd hide it under my waterbed, and I'd drink it, you know, at night to kind of relax. you know, at 14. I needed to relax. And that's when my drinking, you know, kind of took off. I started drinking at a young age. But then eventually, you know, I changed my mind about the whole drug scene. And I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I kind of thought that, you know, it was so much trouble to mask the drinking and stuff. I'd go off into the other area and pursue that, and I did, you know, with a vengeance. I got deeply involved into you know, all kinds of activities that that I didn't think I'd ever do. And where it took me was I ended up getting married at a young age. I was 19 when I married my first wife. And we moved off to, and my drinking and drug use had escalated to the point to where, you know, I was already considering about ways I could get away from it. And I ended up moving with her to Aurora, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago, you know, in an attempt to escape the wreckage that I'd already caused at 19. And when I went there, I thought I was going to have a whole new start at life, and things were going to be good at last, you know, and I'd be able to, you know, start a family and have this 17-year-old bride and me, you know, go off and be happily ever after. And what happened was, when I got to Illinois, the legal drinking age in that state's 19. And so I spent a lot of times in pubs and bars, you know, drinking. Matter of fact, I went to work for Rainbow Bread, and I was a route salesman, and a lot of my customers were bar owners because they had fish fries, and I'd be able to go sell them the bread. And I'd end up going in there, you know, selling bread to these guys, but sitting down and having beer. It was normal for people who worked, you know, just throughout the day to have beer with lunch or beer at, you know, break time, the afternoon break. So that's what I did, and I just kind of drank throughout the day. Things got bad there too, and I ended up relocating to Fresno. And what I remember about my, you know, the way it was for me was, once I started, from the time I was 16, I started drinking on a daily basis. And I did that until I was 29. By the time I was 29, I had gotten, I was 27, I'd gotten kicked out my first wife and me. I could no longer support her. I could no longer, you know, go to work and be productive without stealing from my employer. I'd show up late to work. I could no longer function as a, you know, as a worker for my employer. And so, you know, consequently, I would either quit or get fired with the jobs that I had. And I was no longer a good provider for my family that I, you know, had built with her. And she ended up leaving me for another man. And, you know, mind you, I hadn't worked for probably the last 3 years of our marriage. I would spend every bit of the money I had on getting high and getting drunk, and I'd never be able to bring home any money for the kids. The kids always had to bum money from the grandparents. We were living with the grandparents, you know, for most of those last 3 years of our life. And I was thinking, you know, when she finally left me for another man, how dare she do that to me after all I've done for her? And, you know, I was angry, you know. I swore that I would never work another day in my life. At that point in my life, you know, I was so far gone that I swore that I'd never work another day in my life, because that bitch had did my child support checks, and how, you know, there's no way that I'd ever give that to her. And I resigned myself to living in my car, you know, and on the streets of Fresno. I didn't have a place to live. I was homeless, basically. I stole every day. I was in and out of jail constantly in the last few years of my life. Rarely took a bath. Never wore underwear, because, you know, you just don't wear underwear when you don't take baths. I mean, there's no point in it. And you know, I was smelly and sick. And nobody, anytime I'd walk into a store, people would look at me like I had the plague. And the thing that I did on a regular basis was I had found me another significant other, and who this person was she was a lady of the night working on Motel Drive, and you know, me and her would hang around together, and we'd drink and we'd get high together, and you know, I would take her to turn tricks, and we would, you know, play guys for, you know, for their money. And rob from people, and we just did the whole thing. But what we did on a regular basis, me and her would get in a car on a hot summer day, and we'd drive around all the car washes in Fresno, and there'd be these grates where the water would drain in, and people would, when they'd go to put the quarters in the car to get their car washed, they'd drop quarters in there, and if you go to these car washes, almost always I found $2 or $3 in quarters that people thought that went down the drain, and they were really just right underneath the deal there, and we would go around and scrounge quarters for gas or some Tootsie Rolls for dinner or whatever, and that's the way I was kind of living my life the last couple of years. What happened was my first wife's best friend, she was a nurse. She saw me at this car wash one day, and she walked up to me and she looked at me and she said, Pat, what happened? And I probably weighed about 130 pounds. I wore size 26 waist pants. I was the same height I am now, so I was pretty sickly looking. She asked me what happened, and I told her that I'd been, that me and my wife, Sandy had got a divorce, and she left me for another man, and gave her the sob story, and she said, come over to my house, I'll help you. So I figured she would, she was graduated, she graduated from college right out of high school. She'd been working as a nurse. I figured she had the qualifications to take care of me, so that what I did was I went and dropped my significant other off at some family's house out in San Joaquin, and I went and moved in with her that very same day. And I was with all the intent of this woman helping me, maybe getting my life straightened out again. And I loved her anyway. I mean, this was a girl that I knew, when I met my first wife. And so when she said that, it was like, man, my life, is going to change for good. She said, this is an angel that sent to me. So when I went over there, I did kind of get cleaned up a little bit, and she did help me. But what happened was about 3 months into that relationship, she was worse, and I was, not really any better. And her family noticed that there was some, some signs going on there, like she wasn't bathing anymore, and she wasn't, taking care of the kid very well. And there were some actual signs of neglect, with her son not getting, proper clothes and meals and stuff like that. Well, her dad was worked in law enforcement in Fresno, and her mom was a school teacher, and they'd all come over there and kicked me out of that house and took her to treatment. And I thought, there goes my chance, my only chance at, getting my life back together. And I ended up, moving out and living back on the streets. Well, what happened was, we had some communication after they put her in treatment. And she started telling me that this thing called recovery was pretty good. There's people here that actually help you. There's meetings that they go to that are helpful. And she said that she was having a little bit of fun being clean and sober. And I thought, no fucking way. There's no way I could imagine me having any fun being clean and sober. It wasn't in my, I couldn't imagine it. Even though I wasn't, it had been a long time since I'd had fun partying, because my daily life existed of, putting something in my body to make me feel okay. It was no longer a party. The party had been over, but she was telling me she was having fun. She was riding horses. She was playing baseball and stuff that I thought would be, square. not hip, not cool, and so what happened was, I went and tried to get into the same treatment center with her, because I missed her so bad. they wouldn't let me in there, but what I did do was I got into another treatment center, and it was a 1 year treatment center there, and one of the reasons they wouldn't take me in the one that she was at, it's called the Arc, it was in Fresno at the time, and they wouldn't take me in that one was because Dr. Deutsch was the addiction specialist at the time. He told me that at the stage that I was at, that I needed intensive 1 year drug treatment, live-in, drug treatment and alcohol treatment, or I was going to die within 6 months. And I thought, if this is the only chance I got to be back with this woman and maybe have a life, I'll do it. And I went there with every intent to stay for the year. And what happened was, after 30 days, my feet started getting a little itchy, and I'd been sober, now for a while. What happened was I left there. But when I left, I went to to the other fellowship was having a volleyball game over off of Blackstone near where the Fresno Fellowship used to be, off of Princeton, I think it is, by the old Pachecos. And they were having volleyball games on the Saturday that I left that treatment center, and I went over there with nothing but the clothes on my back, and the shoes on my feet. I had nothing. I had no money. I had no place to live. But when I left there, it was the first time that I had been clean and sober in 13 years. Because every day that in those 13 years prior to that, I had to take something in order to make me feel okay. When I wake up in the morning, I need to take the edge off. And I remember feeling like I was the most wealthy person in the world. And I thought, how can this be? Man, I got nothing, but I felt like the richest person in the world. And I was grateful for that one day. And things happened. I ended up, sticking around. She got out of treatment. We got back together. It was, romance and recovery. If you're new, romance and relationships and recovery are a trip. There's a guy that says relationships is an acronym, RELATIONSHIPS. It stands for really exciting love affair turns into outrageous nightmare, sobriety hangs in peril. And that's what it stands for. and that's kind of like what it's been for me, but we got back together, and things were going really good, man. I mean, my life, clean and sober, going to meetings was starting to get really good. My first 11 months, it was like a pink cloud to me, man. It was fascinating. Everything was new. Going to the movies was new. I'd never been to a movie theater, to actually go in and watch a movie. I hadn't done that, probably since I was a kid. Doing things like, taking a trip, going for a actual vacation was new to me. Sex was, in sobriety was new. I mean, without being high, it was new to me. Everything was new. And I just loved it, man. It was exciting. I felt like a little kid every day I woke up. And what happened was the first 11 months, things got really good. I got a job. I got her back in my life. I was living with her in her duplex apartment. And I started going to Fresno City College. And nobody in my family's ever gone to college. And things were just happening really fast and really good. But what happened was I stopped going to meetings. And I started focusing on all these other things. And I got real miserable. This guy, if any of you guys got a chance to see Clancy last Friday night, he described it to a T for me. There's a big difference between, an alcoholic and alcoholism. And what it was for me was, you take away alcohol from me, and I'm miserable. I don't get worse when I stop drinking. I don't get better when I stop drinking. I get worse. And what I mean is I get more restless. I get more irritable. I get more discontent. I try harder to find things outside of me to make me feel good inside of me. And what I'll do is I'll focus on work. I'll focus on making a relationship work. I'll focus on building up my bank account, buying things. I mean, you name it, to make me feel okay. And what happened is the first 11 months, I got so miserable without putting this program first that I had to drink. And when I drank that time, it started a whole chain reaction of things that I thought would never happen to me. Now, I've been to jail, previously, and I've done some pretty crappy things, stolen from people. The worst thing that I have ever done, that I felt bad about was stealing from my own mother, her jewelry out of her jewelry box. But this time that I had drank, I had started taking a bunch of other stuff as well. And what happened was I started doing things, I kicked it up a notch. I started cashing checks that weren't mine, and insane behavior. I was putting, I don't know how, there might be some really smart criminals here, and they're going to think I'm really stupid for doing this, but I put my own name on these checks, thinking I wasn't going to get caught, but I used my own driver's license to cash them, by that time I was homeless again anyway, so there's no address they're going to come and arrest me, but I was at Madeira Food Mart on the day before Thanksgiving, and I cashed one of these lovely checks, and they were payroll checks, and I had a little check cashing printer, a little printer machine that embossed the check and everything. Really nice, looked really professional. Well, I got it from this company, and went in the day before Thanksgiving, bought a bunch of Thanksgiving stuff, make it look like I was doing some Thanksgiving shopping with my paycheck, and it all worked real well. Well, on the way out the store that day, I saw the sign that said, we'll be open Thanksgiving, you know, between 8 and 6 o'clock or whatever. They had the hours and when they'd be open. So I had a great alcoholic idea that I would come back the next day and cash another check, you know. And when I did, well, I showed back up the next day and tried to cash the same type of deal, another payroll check. I think I gave myself a raise that day. And just a little bit, not much. The manager came over to the cash register and said, Mr. Barnett, we know that these checks are stolen and we're going to hold you for the police. And I thought, you know, oh shit, you know, this is it. And I was carrying a .25 caliber Beretta with me in my coat pocket that day. And I pulled that .25 out. It was loaded. I pointed it at the guy, and I said, "You're not holding me for any cops." I said, "I'm walking out of the store," you know. And I don't know if he was stupid or he knew that I wouldn't shoot him, but he rushed me. And I held onto the gun, and me and him got into a big, hassle, and we ended up going over. They used to put dog food and charcoal briquettes and salt and all that stuff in front of the windows in grocery stores in those days, big plate glass windows, but there'd always be these stacks of stuff in front of the windows. And we went over those stacks and went through the plate glass windows with my face first, and they proceeded to pull me out in the parking lot and beat the living shit out of me. And what happened was when the cops came up, I still hadn't let go of the pistol, and the cop, you know, took a billy club and beat me over the back of the head and knocked my teeth out. My teeth got knocked out from the gun. My face hit the gun. All I had to do was let the gun go, you know, but that's all they wanted. And they were scared, you know, but I ended up going to jail that Thanksgiving. That was 1989. And having been exposed to this program, when I got to jail that night, I surrendered, you know, to this power. And I asked, you know, I made a deal with God that whatever happened, that I would accept it. If it meant I was going to go to prison, you know, for a while, I could accept it. But please just let me, you know, not have to drink or use anymore. That's all I wanted, you know. And the obsession to use that night was lifted in jail. When I got out, you know, went to court and all that, and they sentenced me. I had 7 felony counts looking at me, and I don't know how many years of prison that is. But what happened was they sentenced me to 3 years, you know, state prison. They ended up sending me to a really nice institution. They had a nice running track, and they had a nice weight yard, and they fed me real good there. And I got a great job working at in an infirmary, and making 23 cents an hour. I loved it. and I was there for 13 months. And what happened when I was there was I got actively involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they had the other 12-step program there as well. And what happened was, you know, I got a chance to, like, be detached from all the rest of the world and focus on my recovery for the first time in my life. And I started getting some benefits of these steps. I found out that you can be free in prison. And if you don't understand that, you know, I don't expect you to. But what happened was being, you know, being a member of this program and applying those spiritual principles in prison, I was able to be okay with being right where I was at that moment. And I met some wonderful people down there, you guys. And there's a lot of us in prison. And I got a chance to, like, grow a little bit. When I got out, I got active in the program. I started sponsoring guys, you know, immediately. I had, you know, a little bit of time, and I know a little bit about these steps, and I started sponsoring guys. My home group at the time was the old winery group out on Clovis Avenue, and I got active in that fellowship. And I ended up meeting another her, because the girl that I had when I went to prison that promised me that she was going to stay with me, you know, until I got out, and ended up meeting a correctional officer and left me for a correctional officer while I was there. So got to learn a little lesson there. And so when I got out, I found another girlfriend, got another job, ended up, staying active. I was having a great time in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I was in my very first sponsee that I ever got, and this is no joke. His name is Jack Daniels. And this was in like 1991, and to the best of my knowledge, he's still sober today, and he works in Fresno, and I see him occasionally. I don't want to sponsor him, but what happened was I got really busy, in Alcoholics Anonymous. My life got really good, and I went back to school. I got a job. I got an old lady. I actually ended up getting that girl who left me in prison back, after another girlfriend. I got her back, and we started a life together. Bought a house, got a boat, got a Harley, got two new cars, I was going to school, had a job. I mean, I just... wonderful life. I mean, from the outside, you look at it, you think it was just a great life. But what happened was the same thing that happened the first time. I started putting all that stuff in front of my recovery, and I got miserable. And so what happened was after 4 years of being clean and sober, I found it necessary to take a drink. Alcoholism demands to be treated. And if I don't drink, eventually I believe that I'll blow my brains out unless I have a sufficient substitute. That's what these steps are for me. They're a sufficient substitute for alcohol. And they do the same thing, matter of fact, that alcohol did for me, but they do it a hell of a lot slower. But what happened was I ended up relapsing after 4 years. Lost it all, lost it all again. Got back in the program, stayed sober 2 more years, and didn't lose everything that time, but I got back in the program, stayed sober 2 more years, and relapsed again, and that took me up to 1997. Around the end of the summer, or about the middle of the summer of 1997, I had gotten so miserable again. By the time I was going to Fresno State, I'd got my associate's degree at Fresno City College. I was still working, still breaking my back, I was buffing my ass, trying to make the outsides look good by working and, making people happy by how much money I made and all that crap. And what happened was I got so miserable again that I'd relapsed. In the middle of the summer of 1997, I had gone out for my last time. This girl, by that time, we got married and we had a little baby. And her name's Allison. I had three kids from my first marriage who are grown now, but the second marriage completely, ended. I mean, it was over. That last time I relapsed, she kicked me out. I ended up moving into a motel back on Motel Drive where I came from, 10 years earlier. I was drinking to die. I had written letters in this journal thing that I had, over and over and over. God, please help me. God, please help me. God, please help me. And I go to meetings trying to get sober, and I couldn't feel what I feel here tonight. I was blocked from the sunlight of the Spirit because I was under the influence. I couldn't stop. I couldn't put together one day. And I ended up checking into that motel. It's called the Welcome Inn. A really nice place. I was on the third floor penthouse suite, looking the 99 highway, and just sitting in there drinking and to die. And what happened was there was a gentleman who'd heard that I had relapsed and that I was no longer living at home and that I was out there, that I was out on a relapse. And this man, he came looking for me. And, eventually he found me. I guess he might have saw my car in the parking lot or something, but he ended up finding where I was, and he knocked on the door. And when I answered the door, I looked at him, and he looked at me, and he said the same thing that girl had said to me 10 years earlier. Pat, what happened? And I told him, I said, Reyes, I said, I'm in a relapse, and I can't stop. And, for the first time in all the meetings that I'd gone to hundreds of meetings, for the first time, in the history of me being around AA, somebody had actually reached out to me and offered help. And that gentleman's here tonight, and it's Reyes. I love you very much, Reyes. But what happened was he said, come to my house, I'll help you. And I still had a bottle of pills left, some other stuff, and quite a bit of booze left. I said, I'll be by tomorrow. I needed to finish what I had, right? I didn't want to waste nothing. And, my prayer was answered, man. I'd been praying, God, please help me, and he sent Reyes, you know. And I went over there the next day, and Reyes put me up in a spare room of his house. And made me feel welcome. When I was shake and shiver so bad that I couldn't hardly stand up, he would help basically carry me to the bathroom to be able to sit in some hot water and soak the shakes away. He'd bring me food. He even went to, I couldn't eat really anything, but he tried to keep, bringing me stuff, and I kept throwing it up. He kept trying to bring me stuff, I kept throwing it up. And he even went, to the store one time and got me some Lucky Charms, because I thought maybe I could eat Lucky Charms. You know, if that's not love, man, I don't know what is. Got an alcoholic from Lucky Charms. But I think it was the second or the third day, I think it was the third day of that detox. I had gotten out of the bed. I crawled out of bed one dark November night to throw up in this waste basket that he kept by the bedside so that probably I wouldn't puke all over his sheets. I crawled out of bed to puke in this waste basket, and I did, and I crawled over to the window, and it was a foggy, cold November night. And I was looking out the window, and I was in so much pain, and I didn't, I didn't think I could go on. And then I was like, it was the sickest I'd ever been from withdrawals and poisoning, because I'd gotten addicted to Vicodin at the time too, and I was eating like 15 to 20 of those a day, on top of all the alcohol, on top of all the other drugs that I was taking. And I was going through the worst detox I've ever been through. And I was praying out loud that night, God, please let me die. I don't want to live anymore. Life is too painful. And I didn't know it, but Reyes had been standing behind me in the doorway in the dark. He started, he started laughing. And if anybody's ever heard Reyes laugh, it's kind of a, it's kind of a high-pitched laugh. He started laughing. And I don't know what the hell was funny in that room that night, because I looked around, I hadn't seen nothing. Matter of fact, I was filled with so much self-pity, I thought he'd come in and start break down crying just seeing him the shape I was in. But he started laughing. And he told me something that I hope I never forget. I haven't yet. He said to me, what basically encapsulates the whole Alcoholics Anonymous program, in these words. He says, Pat, you're not going to die. He said, you're going to live so that you can help somebody do what I'm doing for you. And I've been around here a long time. I've been around here 10 years, playing with Alcoholics Anonymous, working the steps I wanted to work, going to the meetings I wanted to go to, doing the things I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. And I wasn't getting nothing. The book says half measures avail us nothing. That's what I got. The first 10 years around here, I wasted a lot of precious time. And what happened was, as a result of that immense generosity and his kindness and compassion for another alcoholic, my eyes opened. And when I left Reyes's house, I went to this home group that I'd been going to. It was called the Palma Shaw Morning Maintenance Meeting. I went there, and somebody had appointed me as sponsor. And this man walked me through the steps, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I made him a deal. I made myself a deal. I made God a deal. That if these steps didn't work for me, and I was worse off or no better off in a year, I was going to go on a crusade to every 12-step meeting I could find and tell you all you're full of shit. Drama queen. I haven't had to do that yet because my life, isn't worse off. My life is so much better today. Some pretty amazing things happened. You can tell, you always tell an alcoholic, but you can't tell them much. I ended up staying sober that year. I got my first sponsee at 3 months sober. That gentleman's still sober today. I no longer sponsor him, but he's still sober today. And I started sponsoring him, and we go to meetings. We we meet every Monday night, study the Big Book together. That meeting grew, and by the time that year was up, I probably sponsored a half a dozen men. And I know today that my life depends on me. My constant thought of others and how I may meet their needs. My life depends on me getting out of me long enough to think about you. They say the root of this disease is selfishness and self-centeredness. And I know that today to be my biggest problem. Whenever I'm disturbed, there's always something wrong with me. You know, it's either thinking about losing something that I got or not getting something that I want. And I'm in a constant state of fear unless I can get back in touch with this power you guys have given me and think about what I can do for you. And it has kept me sober. Not only have I not drank or not taken any other minor mood altering substances for pretty close to 12 years, I haven't wanted to. And that's not like me, because I always wanted to. Even in recovery, I always wanted to. I always wanted to think that somehow, someday, I could control and enjoy, you know, my drinking and using. I'll tell you what. By the time I got through, you know, with my run, you know, at 13 years of hard drinking and using and graduating and all these other stuff, pot wasn't my favorite thing. But now, they've got pot dispensaries on the corner. My home group is life on life terms. Two or three doors down, but there's actually a place called the Medmar Clinic. They sell pot there now. And I'm thinking, wouldn't have no problem with pot. and I don't even like pot. But you know, those thoughts come to my mind, but I never act on it. Nor would I want to trade the life I've been given today for that. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a way to live in my own skin like I never have before. Just to kind of wrap it up here, because I'm out of time. I could talk for another hour on what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me, the life that it's given me. I was able to graduate. This impresses some people. You know, people in Alcoholics Anonymous inspired me to go to college because they said they had went to college. There's nobody in my family that's ever been to college, and nor was I ever encouraged to go to college. But people in Alcoholics Anonymous told me that if I ever wanted to better my lot in life, that I might want to think about going to college. They did, and their life got better. Well, I ended up going to college, graduated from Fresno State, with a bachelor's degree in business. Today I work for the county of Fresno in a job that I absolutely love going to. I have benefits. I have health insurance for my family. I'm able to provide for my family. I bought the very first new car that I've ever bought in my entire life in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's 2006, I think, I bought it. First time I was ever able to buy my own home. I live in a beautiful home, you guys, that I still walk into thinking that someday the real owner is going to be there and ask me to get the hell out of this house. You know, but I live in a beautiful home today, and that's wonderful. That's wonderful, and I could never do that if I couldn't stay sober, and that's not why I came here. The message is not for me to you is not that if you stay sober you'll get stuff, but what I'm telling you is that I've been able to stay sober long enough to be able to fill up the inside and feel good enough that those things are added to me automatically. They're just given to me because, you know, I don't know, not because I'm a great guy. I didn't come here being a good guy. It's just kind of a byproduct of what right living, I think. And I'm grateful for the higher power that you guys have given me. I'm grateful for the friendships that I have. My life evolves on Alcoholics Anonymous. I was online two nights ago, Sunday night, registering for the World Convention in San Antonio, Texas. I've been to the 95 World Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous in San Diego. Now, mind you guys, I was there in 95. I was in a relapse during that time, so I was loaded and drunk at that 95 World Convention in Jack Murphy Stadium, wondering, what the fuck am I doing here? Don't ever go to a convention loaded or stoned. It's horrible. Because everybody else was having fun, and I was miserable. But I was there, you know, at the 95 World Convention. 2000, I was able to go to Minneapolis. 2005, I was in Toronto, Canada. And by the grace of God, if I'm still alive, you know, in 2010, I'm going to be in San Antonio, Texas, the World Conference there. I'm actively involved in Northern California Conference Committee of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is happening in next weekend in Red Bluff. You know, I'm in service today. People ask me to join their committee. People ask me to be a part of these. People didn't want me around when I was drinking. Now people want me to be on their boards, you know. Just amazing shit happens, man. I'm able to give back to the community that I took from for so many years, you know, and I'm grateful for that. I thank you for my life. I thank you for the opportunity to be of service. My name's Pat. I'm an alcoholic.